know that the audio of the council meeting will be recorded, will be made available on the City of Marion website. I ask elected members if they foresee any potential conflict of interest with any item on the agenda. Councillor Crossland.
Yes, Your Worship, I will have a material conflict of interest on the item Tuara, as I'm a board member.
Thank you. Councillor Gard.
Even though I'm no longer on the Merino Residents Association Committee, the funding application that they sought was actually in my time on the committee, and so I should step out of the consideration for that either way at the time when it comes up.
Yes, thank you, Councillor Gard. Councillor Telfer.
I have a perceived conflict of interest being a liaison to Marion Life and Cosgrove Hall in the community grants, but not material. So I'm going to remain.
Rightio. That's an interesting one because we don't want too many people to leave the room for the community grants round. Councillor Vlescu.
I just have a question in regards to appointment to a board that, as a council representative, I believe that that doesn't actually... Is that material or...?
It wouldn't be material because if you're the liaison person, you're not a member of the board or committee as such.
But if you're appointed as virtue of a council, being a council member to a subsidiary...
Oh, the subsidiary, one of the non-profit community groups, but organisations like SWARA. I'll ask our manager of governance that who might be able to help us with that situation.
I believe as you had voting rights, you would be best to declare it.
Right, thank you. Thanks for the question, Councillor Vlescu. But those things are noted, and now after someone to move that the communications reports be received. Moved Councillor Hutchinson, seconded Councillor Pryor. All those in favour? That's carried unanimously. Now we must deal with an adjourned item, and that item is the inclusive playground, Henry Street Reserve, page 22 of the agenda. Members will recall there was a very substantial discussion about options at the last General Council meeting. Staff have helpfully come up with some rewritten options for us. I remind members that the matter was adjourned before anyone actually spoke on the matter, so anyone is free to move. Councillor Vlescu.
Your Worship, I'm happy to move option one.
Seconded Councillor Pfeiffer. Please go ahead, Councillor Vlescu, if you wish.
Look, Your Worship, I think we're pretty much delivering most of the playground, and there's a few extra bits and pieces that, if there is further funding through fundraising or sponsorship opportunities, we can deliver those. Council is, and obviously the staff did their best to incorporate as much of the playground as we can, and they're identified on page number 23. Look, it is unfortunate that we couldn't get all the funding from the external body. It did put us in a difficult situation as far as the expectations of the community. And I think it's a bit of a learning curve for us and also other organisations, wanting to deliver projects like this in South Australia, where the climate's a little bit different. I'm optimistic that, you know, we can still get further funding. This leaves the door open for that, but it also means that council isn't committing to extra funds for this, because we were expecting it through a partnership. So without any further ado, I do ask members to support this. We will get an inclusive playground almost in its entirety, and no doubt there will be some bits and pieces coming along in the not-too-distant future on top of that. Thank you.
Councillor Pfeiffer, did you wish to add something?
Thank you, Your Worship. Look, I think this is a good outcome, and I think we need to keep in mind when we're considering a matter like this and voting on a matter like this, we need to be keeping in mind the outcome that we're actually trying to shoot for as a community, with other partners as well, with the state government, with Touch by Olivia, with everyone who's been involved in this. We need to keep your eyes firmly on what it is we're trying to achieve and the community that we're actually trying to serve through a motion like this. This is a significant one. It is something, it is fulfilling a need that isn't out there very much in our, it is a big need in our community that hasn't been fulfilled very well to date. It has been done in bits and pieces here and there, but not in a dedicated sort of fashion. Look, this option does give us most of what we set out to do, but most importantly, it doesn't close the door on us on the final stages actually being completed down the track a little bit further. So I commend this motion to council. Thank you, Your Worship.
Is anyone speaking against the motion? And I'll put the motion. All those in favour, raise your hand. That's carried. Sorry, just before. Well, I'll take that as a sort of a technical amendment, but we're waiting for advice on start. I will put the vote again, but the motion itself needs to be clarified. Paragraph 5 needs some figures attached. So who have we got? We've got one of our managers to kindly make up some numbers. Has anyone got a calculator? Right, now, Councillor Valescu, you're happy with those figures?
I get that, Councillor. I'm trusting the staff on those figures being correct. Not too little, not too much. So.
Very well. I'll just put the vote again now that we have the motion clarified. All those in favour, raise your hand. It's carried unanimously. Thank you. So now we move on to the next item. Are we ready for a deputation? Yes. I'd like to invite Ms. Terry Mayer to come up to the front of the chamber, please. And she's going to speak to us about Resolute Reserve. Councillors will recall that Ms. Mayer was the promoter of a petition about the reserve. So you have 5 minutes, including question time. Thank you. You're welcome.
Thanks for the opportunity to comment on behalf of the residents on the future of the Resolute Crescent Reserve. I've lived in Resolute Crescent for almost 40 years and have many of the local residents. We acknowledge and appreciate the huge task of Council to provide and maintain playgrounds across the city. In January, following advice that the removal of the playground would proceed, a small group of us decided to organise a petition because we were not happy with the decision to remove and not replace the playground, and because we were not appropriately consulted about it. The petition was presented to Council on the 14th of February. Residents from Resolute Crescent and neighbouring streets requested Council reconsider that decision, as the reserve and the playground are essential parts of our local community. We suggested that Council even consider investing into the reserve with tables and seating, a shelter, barbecue and new recreational equipment. We are concerned that removing the playground and undertaking minor landscaping works will leave our reserve just as barren and uninviting as Ranger Reserve, where this has already occurred. The reserve is vital to our local community, as is an older part of Hallett Cove, where the houses are generally smaller and the usable space in our backyards is often reduced by retaining walls. The reserve provides a place for us to meet and socialise in larger numbers, and also provides room for children to play and socialise. Local residents keep the reserve clean and tidy, as your gardeners can confirm, and there has never been a history of vandalism or inappropriate use of our reserve. Information from the council at the time of notice of the intended removal advised of three playgrounds nearby. The distances were identified as radius distances or as the crow flies, and this may be relevant in determining distance in suburbs down on the flat, but not so relevant to the steep and hilly topography and winding roads of Hallett Cove. These make for difficult pedestrian experiences, particularly for small children and older adults. It makes walking with young children with bikes and scooters almost impossible on the steep inclines, and you're never likely to spot a gopher in our neighbourhood. The frequently asked question page identified the playgrounds as Coomaloo Crescent Reserve, 540 metres away. This is in fact a 1 kilometre walking distance away via Apollo Drive. Pavana Reserve was identified as 370 metres away, which is 800 metres walking distance and is on a very steep incline. Shamrock Road Reserve, stated as approximately 430 metres away, is in fact 700 metres in walking distance. So also none of these walking distances align with the provision of playgrounds being accessible within 500 metres. In 2013, the state government stated their intention to improve public health in South Australia in collaboration with local government through the Better Place to Live plan. Recommendations from this plan included making our communities more livable, improving access to parks and playgrounds, increasing opportunities for social connectedness, and boosting opportunities for physical activity. Our recommendations for the future of Resolute Crescent align with all these recommendations. We don't consider recommendations presented to Council accurately reflect the needs of our community. The option for removing the equipment and not replacing it does not meet our needs, nor does proceeding with minor landscaping works and just providing a seat and table. We do acknowledge that the current equipment is old, but we don't consider the risk so high that it calls for its immediate removal either. We believe our needs can be met with new recreational equipment, which could include a swing and climbing equipment for the children, a couple of pieces of outdoor fitness equipment to encourage more physical activity from the older residents. Table seating and shelter would facilitate social activities, as would a barbecue, as it's becoming increasingly difficult to carry and transport our own equipment to and from the reserve. This upgrade is also an example for the Council to demonstrate commitment to the older communities of the city by revitalising our neighbourhood, and we think we're as entitled to functioning green space as other residents in the city. So please consider the strong community voice and the health needs of this part of the City of Marion by improving Resolute Crescent Reserve and in replacing the playground. Thank you.
Thank you. That was certainly well expressed. Do any councillors have any questions? Ms. Mayor, I've got a question. How do most people that you've observed get to Resolute Crescent Reserve?
Well, mostly people walk, because most people that use it come from Resolute, Valkyrie, Sovereign, and a few streets closer to Lonsdale Road in there. There's some families that walk to it as well. But when we have group gatherings there, we all convoy up in our cars and offload our barbecues and eskies, etc., because I don't know if you're personally familiar with Resolute Crescent, but it's very steep.
All right, thank you. Well, that will no doubt help Council in its deliberations.
I've got some copies of that deputation, if that can be distributed.
I think that can be distributed, yes.
Thank you.
Thank you for that. Now, what we usually try and do is deal with the matter soon after a deputation. And indeed, page 66 in the agenda, this item comes up. I did have one question for staff. It's fairly specific, but I noticed that in one of the letters written as a result of a consultation, somebody made the point, quote, play equipment had previously been removed from our park, and I'm not aware of any communication from council to residents prior to this happening, unquote. Is that something that we have any corporate knowledge of?
Through the chair, no, no. We can do further inquiries, but don't have any information tonight to shed light on that.
Open it up to the members as to how people would wish to deal with this. Councillor Valescu.
I guess I was curious as to what the various costs or otherwise would be of keeping the same level of playground, removing the playground or improving the playground as some of the items suggested by a resident who'd done the deputation.
Yes, generally for a new simple playground, the quote that is bandied about is sort of close to $100,000, but of course depends exactly what pieces of equipment are referred to, plus the ongoing maintenance, of course. On page 69 of your agenda, there's a reference to some of those costs. I noticed that in some of the email correspondence before the meeting, there was the question was raised about why we can't do more in terms of renovating, rejuvenating play equipment rather than simply letting the clock tick over 20 years and then insisting upon its removal. What can we do about that, Ms. Dixon?
Through the chair, so the playground is close to 25 years, so the advice that we've got is it's wouldn't be economical. It's getting to the point where it's very difficult to source equipment to replace parts as they wear out, it's getting to the point where the ongoing maintenance would be higher than the maintenance for a new play space that was put in. So that's for a local play space, that would be $1,800 per annum. So the advice from the assessment undertaken is it's becoming to a point that it's not financially sustainable to continue to maintain it.
Okay, Councillor Gard.
Yes, I've done a little bit of investigation on the matter, Your Worship, and hence the email today, and a visit to the location. It's interesting because it's sort of a perfect example of where being a resident versus being a councillor has its clash, you know, and I'm struggling at the moment to look at it through the resident's eyes and the councillor eyes. We as councillors have to consider fairness and equity, as I keep on preaching, and that's fairness and equity right across the council and indeed right across each area of each ward. The difficulty in this case is that as you tend, when you walk into the reserve, to immediately adopt the resident hat and look at it as you know, on face value, that the equipment to one's lay eye seems to be quite satisfactory. Now, looking at it through administrative eyes, you realise that there's always going to come a day when the equipment won't be satisfactory, and it may not always be visible to be unsatisfactory at that point. It's sort of like a car that slowly deteriorates to a point where you don't realise it, but it's not roadworthy anymore. So they're the things that we face, and looking at it as plainly as I can, I would have thought that because it is a facility that people have been able to enjoy and do enjoy, albeit there wouldn't be too many people there that could not go to the alternate playgrounds, and Coomaloo, for example, is a very fine playground with very fine equipment. My feeling is that we ought to certainly revisit this at some time, go through this motion, and we clearly the audit says to us we have to remove the equipment, but revisit it, and Ms. Dixon and I have had a conversation about this very recently over dinner, that we could revisit it and look at something that is practical, less upkeep required, but still serviceable. I think the swings have always been a great thing for any playground. They're not high-intensive installations, and but there are other things like hopscotch squares or activities that don't that involve marking outs that don't require a great deal of intensive care. And I think that's probably where my stance would be as the ward councillor. Well, I'm not necessarily on the same page as my co-ward councillor, but that's how
so
I feel.
So, Councillor Gard, as your time is up, are you actually moving the motion as recommended by staff, but with that caveat that you're willing to reconsider further provision down the track?
Indeed, I am. Ian may, councillor, my co-ward councillor may prefer to move, and I'll second, but seeing he is the Hallett Cove man.
Well, you've moved.
Okay, I so
that's
move.
Why you're speaking.
And do we need to do anything to the motion as is, as far as your judgment is concerned, Your Worship, to ensure that we revisit?
Well, I think that's for the political process between the residents and the councillors. As I understand what your position right now, you're moving the motion as recommended by staff.
Yes.
But you're more than willing to see if there can be further provision.
Indeed. And the process of the motion may determine that anyway.
Well, all right. Well, we have a motion. Is that motion seconded? A question from Councillor Crossland.
Thank you, Your Worship. I'm also of the belief that we move the motion as printed. My understanding is that if we're reconsidering maybe adding a playground to this reserve, it would mean going right back to the policy, the 2017 as it is now, playground policy, because this removal was in line with the 2009 policy. And I thought we just agreed to that policy.
Order. If it is certainly true that it's not good governance generally to make a policy and then start making ad hoc decisions outside it. So if provision of a further playground facility at this site would fall outside of the policy, then members should start thinking about what should the policy really say, which would include a place such as this. And for example, where we've adopted a policy of not having equipment if there's another playground within 500 metres, taking the walking distance rather than the distance as the crow flies may well be a better way of crafting the policy. That is not something we could do on the run tonight, but to answer your question, Councillor Crossland, to go further would require a change of policy, because we've all seen that map with all of the circles, and there are other playgrounds within the 500 metres as the crow flies, but Ms. Mayer has quite rightly pointed out they would be longer walking distances, especially in that terrain. So that's a very long question and answer, but I'm now looking for someone to second the motion if they wish to. Councillor Crossland.
I will second the motion, and as you worships already mentioned, we've spent many months debating the playground policy. We've basically got to the stage where we approved the 500 metres. It was pretty much an overview as the crow flies, 500 metres. That policy has resulted in a number of play spaces and playgrounds being removed. My concern is if we start changing this policy on the fly, one playground at a time, really we need to go right back to the start and work out how much it's going to cost to reinstate every playground we've taken out, because that would be what we're actually debating. Is it that we should revisit that it should be walking distance? Should we also measure the incline between playgrounds? Maybe that is something we do need to bring back. But right at the moment, if we adhere to the policy we've debated and agreed upon, we must really follow the resolution as printed.
Right. Is anyone speaking against the motion? Councillor Valescu?
Look, I'll speak against. I think there's going to be... I think the policy is, as strongly as we can, a guide for us, and I guess a bit of a roadmap. Now, I think there will be things that fall outside of that. It appears here that there may be a legitimate need. It also appears that what we think is 500 metres may not be 500 metres due to the topography, but also the streets. So what I think the residents in this case may find a little bit daunting is we have to reinvent the wheel before they can get their relatively small playground renewed. So why don't we look at what is actually the problem here, and that is the walking distance. So why don't we actually just change the policy, or look at changing just that element of the policy, and I think that'll favour predominantly reserves in the southern area. Let's have a look at which ones are affected, because I think we'll be able to see quite easily there won't be that many. Let's revisit that. So I'm voting against this because I'd like us to look at that as soon as possible and consider whether, you know, this is one that perhaps has fallen into that grey area which we need to address. I guess from the residents' point of view, and, you know, regardless of where the residents are, whether in my ward or other people's ward, they just see that, you know, this is a relatively basic playground and we're going to fluff about trying to before we do anything. So I hope we can move forward on this as easily as possible.
Is there anyone else speaking in favour of the motion? So you have a question, Councillor West?
It's just that I would like to... I'm tempted to move a motion to defer this. Is that in direct contradiction to the motion?
No.
Would that be in order?
You can always move that procedural motion to adjourn an item as long as you haven't already spoken. So, yes, you are free to.
I would like to move that this be adjourned, if that's the most appropriate wording, because... may I speak to that? Or that's procedural.
Can you just give us a date? I mean, just bear in mind the safety audit report as well, but, yeah, do you want to give us a date?
Oh, month.
Okay, so the second meeting in June, perhaps?
Oh, that sounds good to me.
Or you might even... The playground policy's coming back in June, I'm told.
Well, could I suggest that it be in July in that case?
All right.
Thank you.
The first, do we have two? Or 1 in July? Yeah, 1 in July. So, yes, the motion is to adjourn to the July meeting. Councillor, if you could just speak briefly to the reasons for the adjournment.
And the reasons being... that I actually think that this kind of park is a key to keeping more motion and activity by the very young and the not so young. And I'm
no, you see, you're speaking to the merits of the motion
Now. Yes.
So the question is, why do you want it put off to July?
Because I would like us to seriously consider changing the parks policy. And I have to say there's a lot of merit in considering distances. Yeah, that's basically it, actually. So, yes.
Is that motion seconded? Seconded, Councillor Kerry. I'll put that to a vote. All those who wish to adjourn to July, raise your hand. All those against, raise your hand. That motion to adjourn is defeated, so we'll continue with the motion. I've had people speak for and against. Is anyone else speaking for the motion? Then I will just go back to Councillor Gard to close the debate, please.
I have said quite a few words already. Just to add that the other three playgrounds in this area that have been itemised are very fine playgrounds. It does change the dynamics of playgrounds in the area to have them, so it's important for residents, members and administration to understand that fact, that the average playground facility for that part of Hallett Cove, so some quarter to half a square kilometre, is substantially improved. So that is part of the dynamics, and so that is the reasoning behind my motion at large. However, there being an existing playground facility there, I see no reason why we wouldn't revisit to have something of a lesser type and different to the facilities of the other three playgrounds in every way. Something simpler, but something that nonetheless is going to serve the purpose of the immediate residents in that area.
I put the motion. All those in favour, raise your hand. All those against, that motion is carried. Division is called. So all those in favour, please stand in your place. Councillors Pfeiffer, Kerry, Telfer, Hutchinson, Pryor, Gard and Crossland, you may sit down. Those against, Councillors Hull, Westwood, Valescu and Appleby. Councillor Westwood called for division. So I declare the motion carried. So, Council, sorry to report to the petitioners, the equipment will be removed, but as you can tell from the debate, there is some interest in revisiting the policy framework, and if that is tweaked, there may be scope for reinstatement of some further provision. So, you live in hope, and you can work with your local councillors to get the result you want. You're welcome to stay for the rest of the meeting, but we've got another 2.5 hours to go, and you can leave if you wish. We go on to page 98, dealing with the final designs for playgrounds to be built this financial year. There's a very quick report to deal with before that. Sorry, page 97, the Playground Framework Progress Report. That's one of these things where they said they'd come back by this time, but it's not quite ready, so it's going to come back next month. Do I have someone move? Councillor Telfer as printed. Seconded, Councillor Hutchinson. All those in favour? That's carried unanimously. Thank you. So now we are on to page 98, final designs for this year's playgrounds.
Just, Your Worship, I'd just like to declare...
Councillor?
One of these playgrounds is near to my place, near Clare Avenue, so I don't use it, I don't have kids, but I'm just a bit concerned whether there is a perceived conflict of interest there at all.
Shall we record that as a perceived conflict of interest, that Councillor Valescu lives near the Clare Avenue Reserve? But one would think there's a substantial balance. Our utterly scrupulous and beyond dispute governance managers inquiring how close the house is to the reserve.
Very short walk.
Well, if there's the risk that there could be an impact on the property value of your house, perhaps
I'll leave.
Thanks, Councillor.
Can I just clarify that?
Yes, Councillor Carey.
So he would have to leave if there's a perceived effect to his property.
If you followed the exchange, Councillor Carey, I suggested it might be a perceived conflict. Upon inquiry, the Councillor Valescu's property might be sufficiently close to the reserve that there might actually be a material conflict, an actual conflict of interest.
So if the property increased in value, he would have to leave. Is that correct?
That's the principle. It's entirely up to Councillor Valescu, but he's taken the conservative approach, I guess.
He should be congratulated.
Right. Would anyone like to... of course, when these matters come up, we're particularly relying on the ward councillors to have looked at the designs and the costing and the consultation. But over to you. Who would like to move accordingly? Councillor Pfeiffer, thank you.
Thank you, Your Worship. This certainly is the exciting part of the job, isn't it? When we often don't have good news and fun news to deliver, but this certainly is it. I note that I'm probably only one of quite a lot of ward councillors that this one affects tonight, since we're looking at a number of different plans. The one that I'm most familiar with is, of course, 6th Avenue Reserve in Ascot Park, which is next to the Scout Hall, which I'm quite excited to see the design that's come together that's in our pack today. And I think, for that matter, all of the reserves that we've got in front of us look to be really, really nice, good, tight designs that address the consultation well, and hopefully will serve our various communities across the whole city of Marion exceptionally well for the next 20, 25 years.
Yes, from what I can see, it's good work by the design team, indeed. Is that seconded? Councillor Crossland, did you wish to speak?
Thank you, Worship. Just shortly, just to echo Councillor Pfeiffer's comments there. Look, we are investing in playgrounds. This is the extra facilities we're able to provide through the money we're actually spending on playgrounds. They are good designs. I'd only have one question for staff, which I noticed kept coming up in the consultations, and that would be just on sand pits and the worry that they become venues for dogs, and I just wondered if that was anything that you'd be able to comment on there.
We're bringing up the dog in the sand pit expert, Mr. Grimm. Probably academic journals written about this sort of thing.
Sand is obviously a different type of softball material, which actually provides sensory type play. So it's a different type of play material that can be used for kids with auditory processing disorders, etc. So it's actually really good for that. In terms of managing for dog activity, we've just relocated the sand pit slightly and added planting buffers to mitigate dog access into that zone. And obviously there's the bylaws with regards to dog regulations around play space needing to be on leash within 5 metres.
Thank you. I know we've already built a few playgrounds with sand pits. Have we had any issues with those?
Through the chair, to my knowledge, no.
Excellent. Thank you very much, Mr. Grimm.
So were you seconding the motion, Councillor? Yes. Is anyone speaking against the motion? Then I'll put the motion. All those in favour, raise your hand. That's carried unanimously and with delight that we're going to have another few playgrounds this year. Fantastic. Thanks, Mr. Grimm. And now we go to page 136, Community Grants Round, another good news item. I just have one. Councillor Valescu might want to come back in. Yes, just starting the community grants round, Councillor, on page 136. So I just had one question. I did intervene when we had the draft agenda to ask that the criteria be included for the community grants. I noticed that there was one item where a group which operates within the City of Marion had an event outside the City of Marion for people outside the City of Marion, and that receives funding. So rather than cause, I mean, it's in the hands of council, but whatever happens tonight, I've suggested that we have a closer look at the criteria, because if staff think that if that's in criteria, I don't think that actually matches community expectations. So anyway, having made those remarks, would staff like to comment or just let it go through to the debate?
A brief comment, Your Worship. The item number 6 on the attachment number 1 covers the Edwardstown Lions Club application. Their logic is that it's the Edwardstown Club that's hosting the event. They're also very, very pleased, you'll read there, that one of their members is actually going to be elected as the district governor for 17-18. They're quite pleased about that, and that person will preside over the 63 Lions clubs. They did look for a local site. Unfortunately, they were unable to find something within the Marion area and that would seat enough and feed enough, and they've opted for the highway centre, which is a couple of streets, I think. It's close, but it's just outside our boundary. That's the only comments.
Sure. Oh, look, they're a wonderful group. They do lots of wonderful work, but I'm not looking at the group. I'm looking at the principal, so that in the future, how far outside of the council boundaries and for what number of people outside the council area do we provide community grants? That's the question. So we'll revisit that in one of our informal discussions later in the year, I suggest. Councillor Telfer.
I have a question about the council fixtures and fittings that specifically about the electric winch at Cosgrove Hall, which would be obviously on the wall. How is that not considered appropriate for grants, for community funding, and not considered part of a council facility because it's a fixture, and yet we are able to fund SA senior cricket balls, we are able to fund number 34 Morfitt Park, matting for the oval on the council oval. Can we get some guidelines about council accessories and fittings in our buildings?
Mr. Lyons?
Your Worship, I did meet with Councillor Telfer and Cosgrove Hall Rep Chris Tilbrook this afternoon in preparation for this, and I also consulted with Carol Hampton, Manager City Property, and Liz Byrne, Manager Community and Cultural Services. There's probably two matters here. The first is, should this application be covered under a community grant? And when we look at the eligibility criteria that you've asked to be attached on page 5, it clearly says that community grants are not intended to supplement the day-to-day operations of a club, including facility maintenance. And so my staff, in making a recommendation that this application not be recommended, I think have fairly assessed that. The second comment is that Ms. Hampton has advised that she has committed to work, and her staff have committed to working with the Cosgrove Hall in the past. They advised in February that they want to work with them to replace the winch and support them for funding. The grant opportunities are coming out in August for funding equipment in buildings, and Carol and Jameson Kane are wanting to help them apply for that. So this sort of facility criteria is not part of a building. It's not part of the asset itself. Carol has consistently applied that logic to all of our buildings, but she has said that she would want to help the Cosgrove Hall to apply for future funding.
So just following on that point, it just underlines to me the need to review the criteria, because when I look on the page that Mr. Lyons referred to, Under sport and recreation, the third dot point is facility development that meets the strategic plan, including increasing opportunities to improve the community's physical health and well-being. And as I understand it, the winch is connected to the physical recreation opportunities in the hall. So, I mean, it's just, it's hard to assess whether that's in or out, given those criteria. I don't know, any further comment, Mr. Lyons?
I suspect that the intent of the physical health and well-being is building up physical exercise and personal well-being, whereas the winch is viewed as part of the facility itself.
All right. And what was that? What was the grant that you were talking about that comes up in August, Mr. Lyons?
It's an Office of Rec and Sport grant. So Carol has just worked with Halls to put together about $900,000 worth of grant opportunities for buildings. And this is one for building equipment that opens in August and closes in September.
All right. Thank you. Mr. Councillor Hull.
Mr. Mayor, just a question. In terms of conflict of interest, I can only speak for myself, but there may be others that have volunteered for this organisation, being the Sturt Landcare Group. I'm just wondering whether that is a perceived or actual conflict of interest. It's not an incorporated body. I have been a registered volunteer on a number of occasions, so just thought I'd ask the question.
As I understand it, then you're a volunteer, but you're not part of the management committee or the people that organise the show. Is that right? Yeah, well, then, I think you're in the clear. I'm acting on the advice of the governance manager. So, have we got someone to move a motion? Well, Westwood, you're moving. Did you wish to speak to it?
I'm sure all the organisations are admirable, so there's not really much to say about it. Thank you.
Councillor Crossland to second. Enough said. Question, Councillor
Hull? With the Rajah group that were unsuccessful on this occasion, there's some preparation work to be done. Can I just ask that the staff apply the appropriate attention to that group to assist them to get over the line next time, maybe?
Well, I don't know that staff can assist groups to get over the line, but they can advise about the requirements and at least make sure that the format is correct and so on. Is that a fair comment, Mr. Lyons? Mr. Lyons agrees. But, yeah, I'm sure staff will have noted that there's an interest in a further application. Sure. Councillor Valescu.
If you've got community members whose strength may not be in putting in an application, can staff actually write the application for them based on the... Can anybody write the application for them based on the information they provide? Maybe other staff?
I might ask Rach McCaskill to come forward and just give us 30 seconds, if that's all right, just on the process that she adopts for that.
Thank you, Councillor, for your question. I would advise that as staff, we would be happy and willing to meet with any applicant to hear the idea for their application and give them whatever support they need to submit the online application in terms of navigating the technology and the form itself. However, we would be reluctant to actually help them to write the application as we are the ones who assess the applications.
Just to further on that, can any staff from another section actually assist these people to write the application if they don't have their flair with the writing?
Good question. That's something that we haven't come across before. Applicants that we've worked with, when we've able to explain the grant criteria with them and to the best of our understand the heart of their application, they've been able to write it in a way that we're able to make an assessment of that application. obviously groups that don't meet with us to walk through that process, it may be more difficult for us to decipher the true heart behind their application.
It's been moved and seconded. Nobody's speaking against. I'll put the motion. All those in favour? All those against? Carried by majority. Thank you. Thanks, Ms McCaskill. Page 167, the highly controversial city limits proposed reforms. Now, Councillor Telfer, back to you to remove your motion, which was essentially...
Move as per the recommendation that, the words that are already there. That is for option 1A, 24 page, three times a year, a column from the mayor, a column from ward councillors, a column, it would be, I'd need to change that, don't worry about it, Sandy. I would need to change that to a column from the mayor, and a column from three wards per edition.
Can I just check with staff? After the last meeting, I believe what was meant to be captured in the recommendation was the option 1A. That's what Councillor Telfer wished to move. Is that what was done?
No, 1A, it's B. So
Councillor Telfer, are you moving what is set out on page 167, 1, 2, 3 and 4? Because that, just check, because that has your option 1A set out already.
I'm moving option 1. But with the B, which has the three columns here, three wards, 1, 2, 3 per time.
So could you start with what's on page 167 and just let us know how you'd like that altered?
It's option 1A, but it's with the three wards.
Yeah. I move option 1A, but with the three wards. So includes option 1A, which is different from the AB that we were given, and includes one column from the mayor and a column from three wards per addition. I think that's the easiest way of putting it. That's the second bit.
So in paragraph 2, is it a matter of a column from six ward councillors in alternate additions?
Yes, that would be the same way of saying it. From six ward councillors.
Well, except that, I'm just doing the maths.
Point of order.
Just doing the maths, this proposal is for three times per year.
Yeah.
So...
The two columns per ward would come out.
Yes.
That doesn't make any sense.
So how often are you suggesting ward councillors have the opportunity?
Yeah.
Or is it...
We can start again, though.
There is a point of order, Mr. Mayor.
Oh, well, I'm not recognising it just yet. I just want to clarify this point first.
One column from the mayor... and a column from six ward councillors per addition.
So that would give half the councillors one a year and half the councillors twice a year.
You're elected for 4 years, which is 12 additions, and you will, as an elected member, do six of them. So but 1 year you'll do one, the next year you'll do two.
Okay, so you're not trying to achieve the same number per councillor per year?
No.
Okay.
In the life of the 4 years, elected members will be able to report half of the addition, every other addition.
While staff are grappling with recording that, I'll take the point of order. Where was the point of order? Councillor Hull?
Mr Mayor, there's already a motion moved and seconded by this council, and it's up to this council to vary that motion as per the Appleby intervention. So that's where we are.
Where we are is that the governance manager very strongly takes the view that what occurred at the last general council meeting doesn't count for anything. So we're starting again, and I've recognised Councillor Telfer to move the motion.
In the background of the report, I've included it.
So there is no point of order. Look, there might be a difference of opinion about, you know, how it ought to be done. I'm sympathetic to the point of view that you're putting, but I'm taking the advice of the governance manager, and we're starting again, frustratingly. Councillor Telfer.
In speaking to this, we all have an opportunity over 4 years to report to half of these. I was horrified when I heard that in the city limits that we currently get, only 2% of our residents read the elected members' reports. So obviously 2% is not a huge amount, and that suggests that having the whole 12 of us there all in a row putting up our politics is overkill. And surely half of us is sufficient. And the new layout, having a picture, some data and a award on one page, as in example B that's been given to us last week, I think is very attractive. And I hope we can get to 10% readership of our residents, because 2% is pretty dismal.
Councillor Hutchinson to second, if he wishes. No? Gone off it. No. It might be Councillor Westwood I'm looking to. Thank you, Councillor. What would you like to say about it?
Yes, I'd just like to pick up on the point of being ignored by 2%. It's better for half of us to be ignored by 2%. Oh, sorry, 98% by the 98% than the whole lot of us. But anyway, I think this is, sounds like a workable solution, and let's hope for the best. Thank you.
Councillor Lescu in opposition.
I'd like us to be able to contribute more. You know, we've got people don't need to see the bottom of my jacket. We could have smaller photos, and we could have more writing, and more people can be included in what's said. I guess if council does proceed to limit the number of contributions from council from councillors from the paper edition, which delivered is costing around about 62 cents or 61 cents each, whether you're doing option 1A or 1B, and I prefer 1B, then we should have all councillors able to contribute in the digital edition. I don't think there's a problem with adding in an extra couple of pages for the council in the digital sphere, because there's no printing costs, just the setup. So I guess that's a question. Can we do that?
That's right. So would staff like to respond?
Waste of space.
We're sending out a communication to the communications manager. Mr. Clark, would you come forward, please? Mr. Clark and Mr. Watson, you've got the full range of expertise in front of you to answer this question. What was the question?
Through the chair, yeah, that is possible, but there will be some additional design costs, which have to work out how much that would be.
There's a template you could fill in.
You're correct, but we'd still actually have to get some designers to physically drop in the copy. So it will be a redesign of the page. It can still be achieved, but there'll be an additional cost with that. I wouldn't imagine it would be much, and we just need to work out how much that would be.
Just clarify, design costs, when you're talking about either 4, 6, 8 or 12 councillors, I mean, what's the difference in the design cost for a digital edition?
You're not actually doing a digital edition. You're still having to physically lay out an actual edition of the paper, and what you're doing, you're just converting it to a digital file. So there's no difference.
Okay. Councillor Hull, a question?
Mr. Mayor, I have to put this report alongside discussions we had in the previous council, and it talked about having ward-specific targeted communication by elected members. It didn't go anywhere, as we know, but this report identifies that a 2% hit rate is suboptimal, and what I'd like to know is, has the administration got any other ideas in terms of elected members being able to communicate with our community, aside from what's being proposed tonight? Now, you know, to temper this, I don't think that Reforming Health is going to have to do another research paper on the ill effects of the mental health of the City of Marion because elected members haven't contributed to the city limits. So I'd just like to know, has anybody looked at a better way of doing this given the current, given what we've been told, the current situation is suboptimal?
Mr. Clark.
We've looked at a range of options, from giving this out very much as a flyer and also making this totally online. We think this is probably the best option which we can deliver at the moment within the cost.
A question from Councillor Gard, or are you speaking in favour? Or
I was wondering if I might move an amendment, Your Worship.
Yes, of course.
Just putting it simply, to idea of 4 a year and 2 representations by each ward councillor per year, so 1 every 6 months. I think just behind that motion I would say that...
Sorry, Councillor, I'm just getting some advice that what you're suggesting is actually closer to what appears to be 1B in the table, 4 per year, which would allow how many, just Mr. Watson or Mr. Clark, help me out, how many elected member contributions? Two per year per councillor. That's what you're suggesting,
yes,
Councillor Gard?
Yes, it is.
The problem then is that what you're suggesting as an amendment is really a direct contradiction.
I see.
So we must... cumbersome as it is under the meeting rules, we have to deal with this motion, and I'll come back to you for that motion if this motion fails.
Lost. Yep.
Councillor Pryor.
Thank you, Worship.
I have a question. It goes along the lines of, if we cut half of the wards out of our publications for the elected members' time, I would suggest that our 2% readership would drop to 1%. Because I don't think too many people would read stuff that's outside their ward. Whereas if we decided to have one representation from each ward per edition, so one of the elected members would represent one edition, the next one would represent in the next edition, and so on. Maybe a better way to go forwards, maintaining our 2%.
Very clear thinking. Further speakers? Councillor Hull hasn't spoken. Go ahead.
I'd like to move that as an amendment, the prior intervention. Can that be done, please?
Yes, that is an amendment because if you look at the existing motion, that's not inconsistent with paragraph 2. So the amendment is probably to put after 6 ward councillors, bracket, 1 from each ward, in brackets. So I'll accept that amendment. You've already spoken to it. Is it seconded by someone who hasn't spoken? You can't second your own motion, Councillor Pryor. Oh, it's Councillor Hull's motion. No, sorry, it is.
I think I'm obligated to second it, given it's the prior amendment.
Look, you've already spoken, but I think I can, you know, using the Mayor's extreme discretion, I'm going to allow you to second it in reverse order. So it's Councillor Pryor to second. Question, Councillor Lescott.
Is it possible to put the contact details of the other councillors on there as well, just so people are aware that there are two representatives?
Yes, it is.
Yep.
Councillor Crossland, a question?
A similar question. If this is not too rigid a agreement, could we actually even have one column and have pictures of two councillors on there, and we can jointly issue one for the ward?
I'll take that as an extremely hypothetical question. If you want an answer, no, it's never going to work, is the answer.
Depends. It depends how close you work as a team.
In every case, I don't think you'll quite get that level of cooperation, even though, of course, in Coastal Ward, we know what chums you are, so...
Just a question. Can this be called the Warrakowie intervention now, please?
Okay, we have run out of questions, I'm glad to say. We're now going to vote on the Warrakowie intervention. All those in favour? All those against? That's carried. With a very sneaky little vote from Councillor Lescu. I mean, that was you were voting in the affirmative, weren't you? All right. It's meant to be arm up, you know. So not having a go at you, but I actually did wonder for a moment how you were voting. But no, I recognised it. It was carried 7-4 as far as I could see. So the amendment is carried and it becomes the motion, but we're not there yet, not at all. Because anyone who hasn't spoken can speak for or against the amended motion. If there are no further speakers, Councillor Telford to close the debate.
We do everything else electronically. We live by our iPads here, and then we want to continue with having the same number of editions per year. And we want to have large, big and glossy. I believe that this new format is more appropriate for a city that's looking after its dollars, looking after the way it works, and trying to get information regularly across to our ratepayers. But I also believe that December and January are dead months, so there's no point in putting out papers around that time. So I go for the digital, and I go for the 3 a year.
All those in favour, raise your hand. All those against? It's carried. So we will have a new format. Thank you, everybody. Now we're on to the Fraud and Corruption Framework. There was just one matter that I'd raised with staff along the way, because I didn't want there to be a statement that elected members are responsible for all possible frauds that take place. I thought that was perhaps shifting a little bit too far in one direction. And elected members may note, it's actually on page 186 of your agenda, but staff have adopted the recommendation I put forward that it should be that the council responsibility is ensuring that systems are in place to minimise fraud and corruption activities. Okay, then managers have a whole lot of responsibilities under that, but we have to make sure that at least the right systems are in place. And indeed, this framework is part of that. So I don't have any reservations about it now. Councillor Hull?
Mr Mayor, given the ATO fiasco that unfolded last week, is there any means that our executive can monitor any staff that seem to be living beyond their means, which must have been fairly patently obvious with the ATO? That's one question. The other question I've got, in terms of the rigour, now I'm not suggesting what happened with the Local Government Association was in any way fraud or corruption, but the reality was that the council was overbilled significantly for about 13 years, and no audit committee, executive member, or anybody else picked it up. So I just wonder about the rigour of our systems in terms of picking up fraud, if an overcharging can get through for that many years when it was plainly obvious that we were being ripped off by being overcharged by the LGA.
Two questions there. One is about the triggers for investigation of fraud, I suppose, and ostentatious lifestyle is perhaps one, but I suspect that would be extremely difficult to observe normally.
Ferrari turns up in the driveway.
And the second part of the question, of course, refers to a past event, but I suppose what the significant question that comes out of that is, have we improved our processes since that overcharging was taking place? So, Mr. Scull?
Thank you, Chair. The first one, I agree with the Mayor, it would be very difficult to actually track an ostentatious lifestyle unless that Ferrari did turn up in the car park, and then there'd be lots of raised eyebrows. I'm pretty comfortable. I am very comfortable with the processes that we've got to track, to monitor our spend and to monitor how things go with the audit committee and the auditing that we do. So I'm very comfortable that it would be highly unlikely for anything of the magnitude that you saw. Of course, it's impossible of that magnitude, but anything of magnitude to get through. The other question about improving our systems, my view on the overcharging is that that would be very difficult to uncover in any time, because the bill came from the LGA, and I think that would be quite difficult to monitor then and now. And I believe it was only when the LGA uncovered that a couple of years ago that that they did it to pull through. I might be wrong on that.
All right. I've got someone to move the motion. Councillor Hutchinson. Councillor Crossland seconds. Councillor Valesco.
This is really important. And I think that people do need to be vigilant. If you look at examples at
You're speaking against, are you?
In favour.
Well, we've already got a mover and seconder. I mean, seems to me there's pretty general agreement, but it's up to you. Anyone can speak against if they wish. But they are our adopted meeting procedures. I'm not meaning to be harsh on anyone. All right, I'll put the motion. All those in favour? That's carried unanimously. Thank you. So we'll move to page 197. This is another interesting one. Three options. First of all, there's a bit of history about the Coordinator General. So not all members may be aware that he has visited the council on two occasions in the last 3 years to strongly urge a different approach to be taken in respect of suburban developments, and I'd ask Mr. Scull to actually tell us a bit more about that, because I think it's a significant development that needs to be not done secretly, not done behind closed doors, but openly.
Through the Chair, the Coordinator General came to us and was asking us to be show consistency in the decisions that we are making through our development assessment panel. And he gave evidence as resulting from a complaint that he got that for a similar development, one application took up to 400 days to process and another was done reasonably quickly. And also in the same vein, there was one development that was passed and one development which is very similar to another that what didn't get through. So he was asking for consistency, and he's apparently doing that with a lot of councils as well. So that's what he's come to see us about. The other one is he has also come to see us, in my time here at least, for a significant development over $3 million on South Road.
So the question here is about these matters that are over $3 million under this new planning regime or trigger, and the options for council are whether we get the general council to decide all of them, the DAP to decide all of them, or to have some sort of halfway house and for council to decide those that are significant to nearby residents but otherwise let the DAP deal with them. Of course, staff may be uncomfortable with that because it would leave them an element of judgment about which body to refer to. But on the other hand, there are certainly advantages and disadvantages of the General Council dealing with such projects. On the one hand, we might want to have control. On the other hand, the level of decision-making, let's say, needs to be at a very high level, and the Development Assessment Panel, of course, is mainly populated by professionals. Councillor Hutchinson.
Thank you, Your Worship. I'd like to move option one and test that on the floor. Members, developments over $3 million are big. They are generally going to impact on a number of residents regardless. I think as a council, as the elected body, we should be the ones to have a say in the mix because they are so significant and they impact the greater number of the community members that we would ever see. I think we are in best place to have that out in the open, and that's consistent with our transparency and openness, and I'd like to see that done here in the chamber. So I'd like to test that with members.
Thank you. Is that seconded? Councillor Telfer, did you wish to speak?
I had decided option one is preferable. I think with the changes that are ahead of us later this year, where we become more regional and have one elected member maybe on that regional body, that's not far away from us. We won't know about all the details of a $3 million project in our midst, and I think we all need to be on top of the details to do with big projects in our areas.
I do have a question before we go ahead in debate, and it's about the $3 million trigger. Because as I understand it, when the Coordinator General came to visit the Chief Executive twice in the last 3 years, the Coordinator General had a jurisdiction for, I think it was over developments of over $4 million, but the Coordinator General said, well, I'm accumulating a number of them, and that'll get us up to the $4 million. Is that the case, Mr. Scull?
Chair, the only one that I've been party to, so I haven't been here for that even 2 years yet, is that it was a $3 million development on South Road, so it wasn't accumulated. And it was valued at about 3 point something.
We've got Mr. Hooper in the room. Could I ask him to come up and advise us about the previous occasion, which was when Mr. Searle was the Chief Executive? Thank you, Mr. Hooper.
Through the Chair, the first time that the Coordinator General came out to Council and met with Mark Searle, who was the CEO at the time, related to four separate development applications. They had no relationship to each other, so it wasn't a case of in suggesting that they be bundled up together at the time. It was simply a case that all four of them had received concerns from the applicants who had complained to the Coordinator General that Council was not approving those developments and therefore stifling investment in the city.
While you're here, Mr Hooper, this $3 million, can you tell us how it would be triggered? I mean, can it be adjoining developments? Can it be a group of developments by one developer? Does it have to be one site?
Through the Chair, since this was first introduced, I think it was 2014 that it came in, there have been examples where there have been developments by one developer, and I'll name the developer, Peregrine Corporation, that have been in a number of different council areas that have been grouped together and all called in together, even though individually they were less than $3 million. So that has occurred. That isn't the instance with the current two that we have at the City of Marion, though.
All right, thank you. Now, on with the debate. Any questions or people speaking against? Councillor Hull?
Mr Hooper, in any one year, how many of these sort of developments would we get? I'd just like to know how often this might be coming back to us if we go with the option proposed.
Yep, through the Chair. So up until now, the City of Marion hasn't experienced any. So we've gone almost 3 years without any at all, and then all of a sudden we've had two just in the last couple of months. There is a third one that is possible that may be called in and that could well be contentious. The current two that have been called in may not be contentious. So there might be a flurry, but then you might go 3 years without any at all. So even if you said it was an average of one per year, that's probably being optimistic.
Right, and I'll just chip in with a question there. Mr Hooper, we don't want you to disclose anything commercially in confidence or whatever, but if there are publicly available applications, can you actually describe what those $3 million developments are?
Yeah, through the Chair, the one that is already on public notice and is already officially lodged, so it is, I'm not revealing anything that isn't out in the public realm, is for the Bunnings on South Road. That's the current one. The other one, we have received correspondence advising what it is. I don't think there's any secret in it. It is for a Peregrine service station. That's all I can probably reveal at this stage.
And can you... All right, we'll leave it at that. Councillor Hull?
More questions. In terms of option one, Mr Hooper, if it went to the council and the council's comment was to refuse, how would that stand up in the ERD court as opposed to our DAP refusing it? And the other question I have is, would there be collateral benefit in having both the elected wing of the council and the DAP giving comment, in other words, using our professional and chosen system, along with the council making comment? And I'd like to know the answer to those two questions, if that was possible.
Mr Hooper.
Through the Chair, you may recall that there have been in the past Crown developments for the removal of regulated trees along the railway line and as part of the Darlington upgrade. There was also a development application that was called in for the Development Assessment Commission for paid parking at Westfield Marion. Those applications all came to Council. What they enabled the Council to do was to provide comments that were broader than merely the planning issues. So one of the benefits of having General Council consider it is that you can consider community sentiment and you can, you're not constrained by purely making a planning decision. So that's the advantage of it going to Council. The disadvantage, of course, is that if the application has a particularly planning nuance with it, then the development assessment panel expertise isn't considering it. However, that expertise is replicated by the Development Assessment Commission and the planners writing reports up there, so it's not like a planning assessment isn't done anyway. So I would have thought that, for example, the removal of the trees along South Road was quite contentious and had a lot of politics behind it, and elected members, my impression was it would have preferred that to have come to a council meeting, which it did, rather than to have been determined by the development assessment panel or even by delegation by staff, which they can be.
The
Well, option three was either or. You're suggesting some sort of additional option of what council deciding, but after hearing from the DAP or something like that. Is that right? The point is that somebody has to be the decision maker. So what are you proposing? Any comment, Mr. Hooper?
Well, for example, I've written the report on the assumption if council decided with option one, I've written a report for the Bunnings application. Now, what I've done is I've incorporated planning comments in that correspondence being referred to council. So whilst it's not a full planning assessment and doesn't go through every single principle of the development plan because it's not a planning committee, it is touched upon some of the issues such as contamination, bulk and scale, landscaping and things like that, because I think they're important to the council. So those issues aren't missed. If you did decide you wanted to go to both, though, that would have to be simultaneously and not one after the other due to time constraints.
Right. Other questions, Councillor Gard?
Your Worship, it occurs to me that every council is in the same boat with this situation, and has the LGA taken any lead in it in collating some thinking? But sheer logic would say to me, in support of what Councillor Hull is saying, that if would we not be leading with our chin to make comment without any professional backing whatsoever, and it's not such a silly idea. It was not a silly idea in the first place to consider that we bring the DAP into a meeting agenda item of that nature together with General Counsel and have it dealt with accordingly. That to me would be the professional way, but overlaying all of that is the issue of if every council does it a bit differently, it's sort of a divide-and-rule situation, or it's inconsistent and some councils will perhaps get better results than others as a result of their process.
So, in answer to that question, two things. One is that Mr. Hooper was saying that if it comes to council, option one, first of all, there'll be professional planning advice that comes with the report to council, presumably from staff, but it could be obtained externally. And secondly, there'll be a planner available, presumably, at the council meeting. There will be the development manager or someone else if we wanted. So there is that backup, as you call it. In terms of the LGA, do we know if there's a preferred position? Nobody knows. They haven't told us. Councillor Crossland.
No, thank you. We'll just move on, I think.
All right. Is anyone speaking against the motion?